Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I am Team Reddy Sai Bishu, and as always, with me is Sai Prakash. So today we begin discussing the last segment of chapter 16. If you have been following Vahini Satsang in the previous episodes, this chapter 16 is a long chapter. We had broken it down to six segments actually, and we have had very beautiful discussions. It is all centered in one theme, one very powerful, important theme, and Bhagwan now concludes this discussion on samskaras. So let me play for you now the 16.6 segment, and then with prayers at his lotus feet, we will begin the discussion.
దీనికి పరమేశ్వరుడే మన రక్షకుడని నమ్మవలెను. బిడ్డలో ధైర్యమును పెంచుటకు తల్లి బిడ్డను అటూ నిటూ తిరగనిచ్చును, కాని బిడ్డను క్రింద పడనీయదు. పడబోయినా వెంటనే వచ్చి వానిని ఎత్తుకును. ఈశ్వరుడు కూడా నిరంతరము జీవుని మీదనే దృష్టి పెట్టుకుని ఉండును. మానవ జీవితమును గాలిపడకకు కట్టిన దారము తన చేతిలో ఉన్నది. ఆ దారమును ఈశ్వరుడు ఒకతూరి లాగును, ఒకతూరి వదలును. ఎట్టు చేసినను దారము తన చేతి ఎందే ఉన్నదని విశ్వాసమును ముఖ్యంగా ఉంచుకునవలెను. ఆ నిరంతర చింతనే మానవుని ఎడబాయక ఆ సంస్కారమునే మానవుడు జ్ఞాపకముంచుకొనిన తన చేతియందున్న ప్రేమపాశమును ఆ త్రాటికి జీవికి ఎడబాటు కలిగించక తన చెంతకే లాగుకొన్ను. అదియే గమ్యమును చేరుట అని అర్థము. కాని ప్రేమపాశమును త్రాటిని జన్మజన్మాంతర సంస్కారములచే భద్రమైనదిగా సంపాదించుటకు సత్సంస్కారములు చేసియుండవలెను. కనుక జీవిగా తయారు అగుటకు సంస్కారమే కారణము. అట్టి జీవిని గమ్యము చేర్చుటకు సంస్కారమే ఆధారము. అనేక సంస్కారములతో బయలుదేరిన జీవి కష్టములు నష్టములు పడి చివరకు సంస్కారములతోనే సర్వేశ్వరుని చేరును. ఇట్టి గమ్యమును చేరుటకు ప్రతి జీవియు సత్కర్మలను ఆచరించవలెను. ఆ సత్కర్మలే పూజలు, స్మరణలు, భజనలు, సర్వజన సమాన ప్రేమ, పరోపకార దీక్ష. ఇట్టి కర్మలను ఆచరించుతూ ఈశ్వర చింతన నెడవాయకుండుటే గమ్యమునకు రమ్యమైన రాజవాట.
వైల్ స్ట్రగ్లింగ్ ఇన్ ద స్పిరిచువల్ ఫీల్డ్, యూ షుడ్ టేక్ పరమేశ్వర హింసెల్ఫ్ యాజ్ యువర్ ప్రొటెక్టర్. టు ఇన్స్టిల్ కరేజ్ ఇన్ ద చైల్డ్, ద మదర్ పర్సుయేడ్స్ ఇట్ టు వాక్ అ ఫ్యూ స్టెప్స్ అండ్ టర్న్ అబౌట్. But she will not allow it to lose balance. She hurries from behind and catches it in case it falls. Ishvara too has his eyes fixed on the jeevi. He has in his hand the string of the kite, which is man. Sometimes he may give it a pull, and at other times he may loosen the hold. But whatever he does, be confident and carefree, for it is he who holds the string. That ever-present faith which hardens into a samskara will ensure that the Lord pulls the jeevi towards him through the prema pasa, or the string of love that binds them together. This is the meaning of reaching one's final destination. However, to earn and safeguard this bond of love and grace, one has to engage in sacred acts over many lives. Thus, it is samskaras that make a jeevi. At the same time, the jeevi can reach its goal through the samskaras. The jeevi that starts its journey with many samskaras undergoes many experiences of pleasure and pain, and finally, only through the help of samskaras, merges with the Lord. To attain this, every jeevi must engage in good acts like pujas, bhajans, namasmarana, universal love and service to others. Being thus engaged uninterruptedly in the thought of the Lord is the royal road to the ultimate goal.
So this is the final segment. And you know, one line in this segment, Sai Prakash, I feel is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, that ever-present faith,
yes,
which hardens into a samskara,
true,
will ensure that the Lord pulls the jivi towards Him through the prema pasa, through the string of love that binds them together. This is the meaning of reaching one's final destination.
Yes.
I mean, faith is the bedrock of spirituality.
Absolutely. In fact, the first few lines of this paragraph itself, when Swami says that Parameshwara Himself is your protector, and He gives that beautiful example of how a mother lets the child walk around.
Mm.
And He says the child is walking around, but the mother is always there.
Yes.
Making sure that the child doesn't fall down.
Yes.
And He says that we have to have the faith that God is always behind us, and He will not let us fall down. So, you know, in a sense, that is complete surrender.
Yes. Yes.
Complete absolutely. Surrender, because you're absolutely carefree. You say, so what? Nothing can happen to me because my mother, the Lord, is looking after me.
Yes.
And the mother is, if you repose that much faith in the Lord will also react accordingly. There is one very beautiful story which Swami tells, I think in the first or second discourse that is recorded in the Satyasai Speaks. So I was just reading that. Second discourse, I think. And Swami tells how this person, I think a washerman or someone, was being beaten by a few of the thieves, etc. And he is just praying to the Lord, and there Goddess Lakshmi is pressing the feet of Lord Narayana, and he immediately gets up to rush to the aid of this devotee. And then he walks two steps and then is like the game that we used to play, London statue. So Lord Vishnu walks two steps forward and he freezes.
Statue,
and he comes back and he says, okay, that's gone. And Goddess Lakshmi is wondering what it is all about. Then he says, I was going to help the devotee, but he decided to do something on his own. He tried to resist and he tried to push the people. Yeah. So since he's doing it on his own, I left him to it. So, you know, it's a very difficult and a very deep concept, because it raises several questions. Like, so does it mean we should not do anything?
But they also say God helps those who help themselves.
Exactly. So what does it mean when we are in a situation? Should we just wait for God to do His magic, or we should do our work? And you know, in a way of thinking, I'm not sure if I am clear about it, but this is just a thought, that a time will come when we are always doing things, offering it to the Lord.
Yes.
And so any reaction that happens or anything that we go through, we take it, accept it as that is what the Lord wants.
Yes.
So if you are put in a difficult situation or in any situation, why is it very difficult for us to think that this action that we are doing is also prompted by the Lord?
Yes. I think one way of looking at this question is, I think it all depends on to what extent have we annihilated the sense of doership in us.
Absolutely.
I think if that sense of doership is completely annihilated, then, you know, whatever happens through you, it is always through the Lord. You don't have to really do anything. Yes. I mean, you will be definitely taken care of. But I think if that is still not clear, if there is 50-50, you know, that is when, because we ourselves are not very clear, that's when these questions come, and that's when you don't know how to react, and, you know, whether we should do something, whether we should not do something. Yeah, you don't have to do anything. If you are really, really fully dependent on the Lord, and there's no sense of doership in you, yeah, fine, you don't do anything. He will take care.
No, He will take care in the way which is right for you.
Correct. Yeah, so not the way
not
expect.
The way that you want.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I had a friend, and he got into gambling.
Okay.
Okay. So I said, be careful, man. You're going to lose a lot of money.
Mm.
I said, hey, don't worry. God is there for me. So he said, then I told him, see, God is there, but don't bank on God. Because God will do what is good for you.
You, yes.
And not what you want.
Yeah.
He'll say, well, not losing money is good for me. That's what he said. Then I told him, see, whenever you're playing, every game you're playing, make sure that the opponent is not that praying types. So, if your opponent is praying hard, then if just God looks at him and gives a smile, then you're down.
Your smiles are gone.
Your smiles are gone. So, I think there are several layers to surrender, and it's oftentimes very, very deep.
Very deep.
So, what do we do? Do we do, in fact, again, speaking on, this is an ocean in itself, surrender.
Absolutely, yeah.
And there used to be this elderly gentleman, and you know, in our Kodai trip, 1999,
yes.
Swami used to call Sachidanandam.
Yes, yes.
And that story comes to mind
yes.
when he narrated
yes.
In Swami's presence.
Yes, yes.
Because he would always speak about this one quality of Sharanagati. And Swami would often call him and tell him to speak, and he would invariably speak about surrender.
Yes.
And one of those days he was narrating in his Tamil, so he couldn't hear much.
Correct.
Swami had to tell his instructions very loudly.
Yes.
And he couldn't see that well as well.
Correct.
So his vision was not good, his hearing was not good, but he would do all the work that Swami yes. wanted from Kodaikanal.
And Swami would want him only to do.
Swami wants him to do. So, you know, everything like going all the way down the hill, going to Madurai, getting, buying a few things, some clothes,
buying the
saris so many things, and bringing it up, and then showing Swami and taking approval. So many things that he had to do. And he was narrating that day, that one, when he was just driving up one of those days, there was a gentleman who was sitting with him, and he asked him, you are half deaf and half blind.
Yes.
And still you drive so smoothly.
Yes.
How is it happening? There are so many, you know,
hairpin bends there.
Hairpin bends and then potholes on the road.
Yes.
And there are, you know, bumps and jumps and so many things. But the car was going absolutely smoothly, avoiding all these jumps and bumps. And he said, this is not possible. This person is... He can't hear what I am saying. How is he going to hear a horn from behind? He can't see what is right in front of him. How is he seeing the road? And so when he asks him, how are you doing it? He says, you think I am driving? And he just lets go the steering wheel. He said, he just leaves both his hands and the car still goes ahead, perfectly avoiding every...
yes, I remember.
You remember that?
Yes.
And he narrated this in Swami's presence.
I also remember the joy with which Swami was listening to him. You know?
Absolutely.
Swami was so involved, so happy.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, wow.
And you remember another incident which Swami narrated. Swami himself narrated this in our Kodai trip, and I won't forget it. He said, these Russians, you know how much devotion they have?
Yes.
They don't have money to go back. They have saved, collected so many, you know, entire year they collect their money to make one visit to where Swami is. So if they come to Kodaikanal, they cannot come all the way to Puttaparthi because they don't have that much money.
Yes.
They come for a few darshans and they go back. And he says some of them don't even have money to go back. They have so much faith in Swami.
Yes.
He said, they just come here. And this morning, that lady, she didn't have any money. She came, she spent all her money to come here. And when she opened her purse, she said it was full of money. Because she said, Sai Baba will give.
Yes.
Swami will give. And Swami himself narrated the story. I remember in the, you know, outside his room, Swami was standing and saying, see, that is called faith.
Wow. In fact, I was reminded of a very beautiful acronym.
Okay.
Someone has made from faith, F-A-I-T-H.
Okay.
Fearlessly, always, I trust him.
I trust him. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, that's, you know, so I just felt that here Swami is saying that like the child that is allowed to walk by the mother who is always looking over the child, there is also this, then Swami says the prema pasa,
yes,
which pulls you, draws you like,
yes,
the kite,
mm,
draws you close. Mm. It's very, for those who have read the Satcharita, this,
yes,
is a very big, you know, topic where,
yes,
Swami refers, in the previous avatar, Swami,
yes,
refers to all his devotees,
yes,
as sparrows,
yes,
whose feet are tied and he's holding the string in his hands.
Yes.
He says, the moment I tug, you all come here.
Yes.
The moment I loosen, you can go. So,
and he's holding that string.
Exactly, exactly. He's, yeah, holding the string.
Hmm. Wow. In fact, you know, when I read this line, you should take Parameshwara himself as your protector.
Exactly.
And when you have this ever-present faith,
mm,
that will ensure that the Lord pulls you to,
mm-hmm,
him. In fact, I was reminded of this very beautiful chapter which is there in that book Autobiography of a Yogi.
Yes.
I don't know if you have read.
Yes.
It's a very beautiful chapter called Two Penniless Boys in Vrindavan.
Ah, yes. Two Penniless
Two
Boys.
Two Penniless,
correct,
Boys,
correct,
in Vrindavan.
Correct.
Yeah, it's basically Sri Paramahansa Yogananda.
And his cousin.
Yeah, and his cousin. So, at that point in time, he was called Mukunda.
Yes.
And so, Mukunda from Banaras goes to his brother's place. His brother is shifted from Calcutta to Agra. And brother is very upset with him because, you know, of his dispassionate nature, and he,
correct,
wants to pursue a spiritual path and all, mm-hmm, that. And his brother actually tells him, you know what? It will serve you right if you just disinherited you, you know,
mm-hmm,
disinherited you because, you know, you are just throwing away your life pursuing all this,
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know how to react. But he only says, his brother's name Ananta. He says, Ananta, I seek my inheritance from the Heavenly Father.
Mm.
And his brother says, you know what? Money first. God can come later. Who knows? Life may be too long.
Mm.
And immediately Mukunda retorts and says, God first. Money is God's slave. Who knows? Life may be too short.
Correct.
And then, you know, he just dismisses whatever Mukunda says. You've just come from an hermitage. So all these, you know, wisdom from the hermitage. And he says, in real world, all these things don't work.
Mm.
You know, I'm talking about a tangible world.
Mm.
And I want to see how your God is going to help you look after your food and shelter. You know, you're going to beg on the streets,
mm,
if you have such so-called lofty ideals. You know,
mm,
it will not help you to fill your stomach. And then, you know, Mukunda doesn't agree. So finally his brother says, so you feel really quite independent of father's wealth. Huh? You don't want anything of father's,
mm,
wealth.
Mm.
And Mukunda says, I am conscious of my dependence on God.
Mm, beautiful.
And then his brother says, you know, then I have to put your philosophy into a test,
mm,
in this tangible world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he says, okay, fine, I agree. I don't think God is in some. God is meant for some speculative world. God is meant for this tangible world.
Mm.
And then his brother puts the test. He,
mm,
says, okay, this is the test. You and your friend, this Jitendra, both of you are going to go to Vrindavan, which is a close by city, nearby Vrindavan. And the first condition, you should not take a single rupee with you.
Mm.
Second condition, you should not ask anyone for money there. You should not beg for food or for shelter. Nothing you should beg anyone,
mm,
there.
Mm.
Third condition, you should not talk about your plight and your predicament with anyone there. Fourth condition, you should not go hungry.
Interesting.
At the same time, mm, you should not go hungry.
Mm.
Not only that, fifth, you should not get stranded there. You should not be like left high and dry there, you know, and I have to go and fetch you, you know. And finally, you should return home latest before midnight.
My God.
You know, if all of these happen without breaking any rule of the test, then he says, then I really will buy your philosophy. I will be the most astonished person in Agra, he says. And immediately Mukunda says, I accept the challenge.
Mm.
No problem. And then his brother is quite impressed actually. He says, you know, I mean, your willingness really adds to your conviction. And he says, okay, fine, let's go right away to the train. Okay. So he takes them to the train and he tells Jitendra, you also go along because, you know, you're going to be the witness and possibly the fellow victim. And so half an hour later, they are in the station and he just buys for them one-way trip tickets. And at that point in time, his friend Jitendra, he's feeling really, really uncomfortable.
Restless.
Yeah, very restless. And he says, you know, Ananta, you know, would you mind just giving 1 or 2 rupees at least?
Backup.
You know, at least if something happens, at least, you know, we can telegraph you. In those days, we are talking about pre-independence India era. And, you know, so that if there is any, you know, grave misfortune, some way we should have some means to communicate with you. And immediately, Mukunda gets very upset. He says, I will not proceed with the test if you take any money from Ananta.
Oh.
He says, no.
Amazing.
And then Jitendra says, you know what, you don't realize there is something reassuring in the clinking of coins, in a clinking of coins. It's always, I think most of us can relate to that.
Correct.
The clink of coins is always something reassuring for everyone. And that's the reason why you want to accumulate. And here, finally, as they're boarding the train, Ananta says, Mukunda, see, it's not that I'm heartless. You know, there is something pricking him. And he says, you know, if by any chance you pass this test successfully, okay, I will become your disciple. He says. I mean, that was too much for Mukunda also to hear, because then in Indian tradition, your oldest brother is almost like a father figure.
Correct.
You know, and this person saying that, he didn't know really what to make of it. And, you know, the train arrived and so they got into the train. And once they got into the train, and this Jitendra says, you know what, I'm already feeling famished. Imagining what ordeal we have to go through. And so he pinches him and he says, you know, I don't see any way God supplying us our next meal. And so Mukunda says, keep quiet, man. You know, don't be such a big doubting Thomas. The Lord is working with us. And he says, can you arrange that he walks in a little bit hurry? I'm really hungry. He says, I had thought of going to Agra to see the tomb of Taj Mahal, you know, the tomb. I had no plans of getting into a tomb, becoming a tomb there. So he says, don't worry, man, you know, cheer up and all that. And he tries to distract it. Mind, think of Vrindavan. We are going to Vrindavan. We are going to the place where whole place is redolent with the leelas of Lord Krishna, you know. That joy is what will keep us going and all that, you know. But, you know, Jitendra can't believe all these things. And just one more stop left and they will land in Vrindavan. And so there is this person who gets into their compartment. And he says, you two guys, are you going to Vrindavan? He says, yeah. And Mukunda is really little not very comfortable talking to him, because this man says, both of you, you look like two guys who have just run away from home. Just like many of those God intoxicated youngsters. So don't worry, you know, I am also one of devotional temperament and all. So I will ensure that, you know, there is food and shelter for you and I will look after you and all that. And Mukunda was like, you know, we didn't even ask you, you know, why are you bothering us and all that. But he says, you know, you just leave us alone. We are fine. Because he didn't like that, you know, he was taunted and told that you're someone who ran away from home. But, you know, after that, they didn't have any conversation. And the Vrindavan station comes and they get down. And immediately this person calls for a cab, a horse cab. And he asks this guy to get in. So they just get in. And the carriage stops in front of a stately hermitage.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hermitage, but it is a very beautiful one. I mean, lots of greenery around. And as soon as they entered, and there were so many people waiting to sort of take them inside. And so this person went in, and a very dignified older lady, she came out. And she says, so this person then introduces these two youngsters and says that, you know, Gauri Ma, the princess could not come. They had some other plans. Their plans went haywire. But you know what? I got two other guests. Mm. And I don't know why, when I saw these two youngsters in the train, I just felt very drawn to them, because they are also devotees of Krishna. And, you know, I just brought them.
My, everything taken care.
Okay. So... So then Gauri Ma, so whatever, she's perhaps the mother figure in that ashram, and she says, oh wow, you know, you could not have come on a better day, you know, I was expecting two royal patrons of the hermitage to come today, but somehow they could not come, and I would have felt so unhappy, you know, because I've made so many lovely dishes that no one to appreciate them. And Jitendra can't believe what is happening, actually. And then, you know, of course, the lunch was announced. And so Gauri Ma led them to a huge place. It is a huge patio, dining patio. And, you know, then she came out, and looking at that, what they were served, you know, not only that, even before they were served, there were two other people who came with fans, and they started fanning. Fanning. And then Mukunda now pinches Jitendra and says, you know what, doubting Thomas, the Lord is already working in a hurry, really. And so they are served this meal of a lifetime. And it was really dishes fit for the princess. And, you know, Mukunda says, I can't believe what work those two royal patrons had. So urgent to miss such a beautiful banquet. And of course, so they had all the food. And then they stepped out. They thanked the mother. And so now they were just under a tree, Kadamba tree, you know, and they're supposed to see the place and return home. And now, you know, again, as it got very hot there, and, you know, they're standing on the tree, nothing is happening. And again, Jitendra gets, you know, very perturbed. And he says, you know what, that meal was some accident, man. Somehow it just happened. But we have got into a mess. We don't know what is going to happen. How are we going to see the city? We don't have a single pie. Which cab driver is going to take you around if you're not going to give them money? And how on earth are we going to go home? And Mukunda says, you forget God so quickly once your stomach is filled. But Jitendra is not convinced, and he says, don't worry, even the same Lord who fed us in Vrindavan will also take us around Vrindavan. He will take us back to Agra. And even as he was saying this, one person suddenly comes in a hurry there. He stops there, and he says, dear friends, I know you are strangers here. You have come to the city. Please permit me to be your host and guide. And then again, they are shocked. So Mukunda is shocked, and Jitendra also can't believe who is this person. And they politely refuse, because they don't know who the guy is, and, you know, what is going to happen. But that person gets very emotional. He says, when these people refuse, he says, why are you banishing me? And Mukunda says, what banishing? We don't even know you. What do you mean we are banishing you? He says, no, you are my guru. And they are confused. Mukunda is completely confused. And he says, you know what? During my midday devotion, I was just praying to the Lord. And suddenly Lord Krishna came in my vision. And it doesn't happen any time like that. And in the vision he came, and Krishna showed me two forsaken figures. And he told me that they are there under this tree.
Go and,
And you should go and look after. And And he says, I'm so glad I found, you know, just as he mentioned, you're standing there under the tree and all that. And he takes them for it. And he says, please come home, you know, stay with us. And Mukunda says, no, we cannot stay with you. And all. I have to go back to my brother's place. Then he says, okay, at least allow me to take you around Vrindavan. And that is how, you know, so they go around Vrindavan. They see the Madan Mohana temple and everything. And it becomes evening. And as evening descends, he says, just give me 2 minutes. Mm. And he disappears. And he says, you know, I will get you some sweets. The famous Vrindavan's Sandesh, that sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And but he somehow disappears for much longer. And finally, when he comes, he gives them the sweet. And he says, you know, please allow me to get this merit, to earn this merit. And he puts money in there. Palms. Mm. And he also puts 2 return tickets to Agra.
Mm.
And he says, please accept. And at that point in time, you know, Mukunda is really moved and he really accepts him as his disciple, and he teaches him, you know, what he has learned from his master, Kriya Yoga and all that. And they reach home, and you know, as soon as they go, they put on the table that the money that they have received, and Ananta cannot believe it. Immediately Ananta looks at Jitendra and says, you know, tell me what did he do? You know, definitely he hits that money somewhere, something he did. You know, you tell me the truth. And then they narrate the whole incident, whatever has happened, and he in fact becomes the disciple of his younger brother.
Younger brother. Amazing, amazing. Story of faith.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just felt, you know, it is beyond logic. It is beyond anything that you can measure. You can seemingly measure this tangible world. You know, you can never rationalize these things. But the power, as they say, faith is to believe, to see the invisible, believe the incredible, and experience the impossible.
Mm-hmm.
and that is what it is.
In fact, this I have told several times, but every time I tell it again, it reinforces my faith in what actual faith is. Swami says, some of the students are asking Swami, how to develop faith in God?
Mm.
Swami says you can't develop faith. Mm. Either you have it or you don't have it. So it's not like I'll be 20% faithful on Monday and 40% on Tuesday. Thursday I like, so I'll be 60%. It can't. Mm. It's not that. And you know that chain of 3 things which Swami has written here very beautifully: faith, samskara, and that prema rasa.
Yeah.
So you know, several things that Swami allowed us to do when we were students. We always did everything in an effort to try to get close to him.
Yeah, physical proximity.
Physical proximity was like the ultimate. So
that is moksha. Anything,
that is moksha, absolutely. So stay awake whole night, do something or pray.
Yes.
So in our 10th standard, we were desperate. Somehow we felt, since we are in 10th standard, we are eligible for an interview, class interview. 10th and 12th, we have to write board exams. You know, that is the most difficult thing.
And for that, we deserve an interview.
Obviously, we deserve an interview. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So we deserve a class interview.
Yes.
And so we were, what is it that Swami likes?
Mm.
And what is it that Swami loves? Which will get us a class interview.
Mm.
So, we all thought, okay, let us keep silent.
Mm.
Because that is something which Swami likes. Swami invariably has told 2 things. For anyone to call themselves my student, in fact, I believe Swami stood on the veranda and said, anybody to call themselves my student, they need to have only 2 qualities. One is talk less, have less contacts.
Mm.
Talk less, have less contacts.
Swami
talk less.
That so much during our student.
Absolutely. Days. He used to give these 2. Yes. Talk less, have less contacts.
At these 2, when you are a student, it is so important to.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So, you know, in that innocent faith, we had that innocent faith that if we keep silent, we will be drawn by that prema pasa of Swami.
Yeah.
And you won't believe it. The entire class decided the next day was a Tuesday that we all would keep silent, and every teacher who came into the class, although it was 10th standard and board exams and all that, none of them taught any subject that day. Looking at the class so silent,
they were
so inspired to speak about Swami.
Oh wow.
Everybody spoke about Swami. Mm. And that is when we got the wonderful news that nobody had written to Swami, nobody had told Swami physically. Swami told Vedanarayan sir in the mandir, my 10th class boys are keeping silent for me.
Oh wow.
Nobody has written. Swami said, nobody has written to me. I know. They are keeping silent for me. And then Swami didn't want to reward us immediately, so he allowed a few more weeks and months to pass
to see that if we're keeping it up.
Whether are we really converting that action into a samskara.
Yeah.
So he was waiting for a few months, and we continued it.
Oh wow.
We continued it, and every Tuesday we used to keep silent. And teachers would come and say, oh, this is Tuesday. Oh my God, we thought you all, the whole class vanished from us. Between two classes, before the second teacher comes in, there would be absolute pandemonium. But on Tuesdays, there is pin drop silence. And then Swami told, they are writing letters to me and they all are keeping silent. So one day he came to us and he said, tomorrow you all come for an interview.
Wow.
He said, tomorrow you all, like top secret, he said, I will come out early and I will give darshan very fast so that we can spend more time inside. And that was a fantastic interview. Fantastic interview. And Swami came very early, I think 6:25 or 6:30 Swami came out for darshan. So early. And Swami took one quick round and we all were there. So Swami called us and we had a fantastic. And then Swami came out and Swami was telling other VIPs, you know how much time, longest interview they had. It is His grace. But what I'm trying to say is, those things which we innocently did just to please Swami, if we can do that in our daily lives even now, we can be rest assured that Swami will be pleased.
Yes.
Talk less, have less contacts. This is something which Swami has often said. And if that can become the heartthrob of each of us, that Prema Pasam will pull. You know, that he's holding the string in his hand. Yes. He'll just tug it and then we'll go closer to him.
Because I think that is one way the mind has to be centered more on the soul than on the body.
Absolutely.
So these are the little tips actually.
Correct.
So as students, Swami cannot tell, you know, you think of the spirit, but these are the practical tips that he was giving.
Correct. And see, the beauty is, physically he was rewarding us.
Yes.
In a way that the soul will reward us now.
Yes.
See that, exactly. Somebody asked me at some point in time, what is the greatest experience as a student? You know, after several years of contemplation, what I felt was, we never found a dichotomy between the idea that here is Swami in flesh and blood outside us, and it is the same Swami who is inside us.
Yes.
There was absolutely no doubt in the sense that this Swami is the same Swami inside me. If I tell him inside me or if I tell him outside, it's the same.
Yes.
That was the greatest blessing.
Yes.
Because that is the ultimate. So everything that we did as students to, you know, reach Swami physically and go closer to Swami physically, any effort that we did, now we should do it in our daily lives to go closer to the Atmaram, to that Swami inside us.
Wow.
Then, you know, Swami goes on from this. He says, to do this, you need to do satkarma.
Yes.
Good actions. Now, there are several interpretations of good actions, what good actions is. In fact, Swami himself said in the 1990 series that anything that takes you closer to God is good, that takes you away from God is bad. But in the West, we have these two theories of what is good action and what is not good action, based on moral standards of society, etc. The utilitarianism theory and the deontology theory. So, Jeremy Bentham, he is the one who started this utilitarianism theory, where it says, the idea that when faced with more than one option, you should choose the one that would have more utility, where utility is defined as the greatest good for the greatest number.
Okay, so that is good.
That is, according to this theory, that is good.
Okay.
So suppose you are going to do an action,
yes,
which will kill two people instead of killing five people. I'm just giving you
I know.
So according to this theory, killing two people, means you don't have any other choice.
Yeah.
You don't have any other choice.
Yes.
So killing two people is the better choice,
yes,
in this case.
Mm.
But there is the other theory by Immanuel Kant. His theory of deontology says that goodness of an action is inherent in the action itself, no matter the consequences.
Okay.
He says you should never lie. For example, you should never lie, even if it would have to, even if it would have great benefit and do no harm. Lying is not right.
Yes.
Even, you know, if it's going to do great help to somebody,
yes,
by lying, even then you should not lie.
It's not,
because it's just not right.
Correct.
So this is the other theory of, you know, Immanuel Kant, where is deontology. So these two theories of, you know, it's almost like means versus ends. On one side you see that if your work or your action is having a good ending, then that is what is important. But on the other side, we are saying the means is as important as the ends. So when Swami says we have to involve ourselves in satkarma, so we have to start defining for ourselves what is that satkarma, and how in every walk of life and in every act, if you are the boss, you have to fire someone if they are not doing their work well. So is it a good action or not a good action? So, you know, so these are, and there are several situations. This may be a simplistic situation, but in life there are several situations. So these actions are what add up to your sanskaras.
Yes.
And so how do you do these actions with that understanding that, you know, in fact, there is a very beautiful quote of Mahatma Gandhi regarding what is good action. It says, Mahatma Gandhi says, it's the action, not the fruit of the action, that is important.
Yes.
You have to do the right thing. It may not be in your power, may not be in your time, that there will be any fruit. But that does not mean you stop doing the right thing.
Yes.
You may never know what results come from your action, but if you do nothing, there will be no result. That's a beautiful...
Just like I was reminded of Dharmaraja. I mean, Dharmaraja, you know, he used to follow Dharma.
Right.
Because I follow Dharma.
Because I follow Dharma, absolutely.
That's all. There's no other answer.
Right.
I follow Dharma because I follow Dharma.
I do right because it's right.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
And so what happens is, you know, there is also a very interesting... you know, connection from this, where when you start doing the right thing, there is automatically, it draws you to the understanding of oneness of all creation. In a sense, once you start seeing good in everybody, you start seeing the divine spark in everybody, and obviously you want to do good to everybody, then you start seeing that unity in creation. And there is that classic example of Sant Eknath. Now, as they were crossing the forest, the desert, and they were carrying water from the Prayag, and they were going towards Ramalingam, Rameshwaram, to offer that water on the Ramalingam, Lingam, and do puja. So, as they were crossing the desert, there was a donkey which was dying of thirst.
Yes.
And everybody ignored the donkey because they were carrying this water to offer it to the Lord.
Yes.
And Eknath immediately stopped and rushed and poured all the water that he had collected into the mouth of the donkey and saved its life. And the moment he did that, the Lord appeared and gave him his darshan. And because he saw the Lord in the donkey. And it's the same thing with Good Samaritan. It's the same thing with several of these Christian stories also. Like, what are you doing? God is not going to be pleased with your worship and with your puja unless you can serve. In fact, Swami also mentions about service towards the end. He says that is one of the best ways of purifying your action, of having good action. One of the best ways of doing good action is service.
In fact, you know, about good actions, you know, here Swami says you must engage in good acts like pujas, bhajan, namasmana, universal love and service to others.
Right.
But there are places where Swami says also that, you know, these bhajans, pujas, you know, going on pilgrimages, they are at best good pastimes.
Correct.
Swami says. People many times think that these are spiritual activities. You know, so if you say, I am a spiritual aspirant because I do bhajans, or, you know, I went on a pilgrimage. But Swami says, no, that is just good, good pastime.
Good way of spending time.
Good way of spending time.
Right.
Just don't be under the illusion that, you know, you're on the spiritual path. Because I think what was always important for Swami, which he has mentioned any number of times in his discourses, is how much have we been able to reduce our arishadvarkas.
Okay.
Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, matsarya. If anything is getting reduced and getting replaced with satya, dharma, shanti, prema and ahimsa, I think that is what becomes a good act. If through bhajans, if through namasmarana, if our anger is reducing, if our kama is reducing, if our jealousy is reducing.
In fact, these are all ripples of the mind.
Yes.
See, basically, anything that calms your mind, that stabilizes your mind. So, what is anger? What is krodha? What is madha? What is matsarya? See, these are all like ripples in the mind because it comes out of comparison. It comes about, it's born from a situation. So, it is a reaction to a situation. It is not your natural nature.
Yes.
So, it's like a reaction to a situation. So, it is like a ripple in the mind. So it's like a ripple. When there are ripples on the water, you cannot see your reflection clearly. So also, if these, you know, bad qualities are like the dust, the ripples of the mind. So bhajans, namasmarana, and all these help to steady the mind.
Yes.
So in at a deeper level.
Yes.
It is very good to engage, to even to spend your time.
Yes,
that is the first step.
First step, yeah.
Because when you start doing that, at least in that 1 hour or the half an hour, your mind is not perturbed. It is not, you know, comparing with others.
Yes.
It is not angry. It is not jealous. It is not. Yes. So it is calm. It is serene.
Yes. Well, I think that is the reason why, you know, you have people who would come for bhajans half an hour, 45 minutes, and they will at the end of it they feel so refreshed.
Absolutely.
You know, because for that half an hour or 45 minutes, you have just forgotten everything.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, you don't even have your cell phone with you.
Yes. So,
if you are
out of the prison, we are all the time in the cell.
Yeah, in the cell. If you are asked to go to the mandir and you have to keep your cell phone outside, that itself gives you so much of peace of mind nowadays.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's like someone was saying, you go to the Himalayas. And obviously, there's no pollution, traffic, etc. And you come back and say, oh my God, that was so refreshing. Because there's no tower signal there. you don't have your cell phone to keep looking at.
Yeah.
And as if the distractions are not enough, technology has added a million fold to everything. But the whole idea is, now, chanting God's name, doing bhajan, doing puja, these are things which help you to focus your entire concentration on the beautiful form of the Lord, the beautiful name of the Lord, so that you are lost in that thought and contemplation and your mind is stabilized. So that is one way of looking at it. But when it comes to service, seva, the moment you think, after all, I am the one who is, did you know I donated this much, I am doing this much charity and this much seva, the whole purpose is defeated.
Yes.
So, service, I think, in a sense, brings humility, a lot of humility which comes from selfless service, which, if done well, If done well, Swami says, you start seeing that same divine aspect in the person who's served. So it's in a way serving yourself.
When you're talking about Mahatma Gandhiji's quote, I mean, Gandhiji says that, you know, only when you lose yourself in the service of others will can you find yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we should be that much lost in seeing ourselves in the others. Mm. And, you know, as we're talking about steadying the mind and how Swami used to tell the students to talk less, I was reminded of how Swami also in those days used to give various examples, you know, trying to inspire students to keep quiet. Swami told, you know, if you talk less, your memory power will increase.
Yeah.
You know, your concentration will increase.
Mm.
You'll get more marks and all that.
Mm.
And I remember Swami also used to mention that, you know, the body is like a pot.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a pot, you have the water.
Right.
So mind is the water.
Mm.
And Swami says, see, if in a pot where there's water, if the water is all the time shaky, then you can't see the reflection clearly of the sun.
Yes.
Okay. And Swami says, similarly, the mind is that water in this pot, which is the body. And if the mind is steady, then God will get reflected in that mind.
Correct.
And Swami used to say, once God gets reflected in your mind, then, you know, your potentialities increase. What you can achieve has no limits because you are drawing from God's power and God's energy.
In fact, I think my father once told me this beautiful episode of a gentleman who, a very simple person from Kolkata, who would go and, because there were plenty of these bougainvillea flowers, he would pluck those flowers, and he, many of them even fallen down, he would just pluck those and go and offer it to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But there was the other gentleman who was very careful about plucking three bilwa leaves and had to do it very ceremoniously, and he would also go and offer it to the Lord. But when this person who would just take the flowers and offer it with, you know, a very pure intention of just thinking of the Lord, immediately there would be shower of Amrit from Swami's photo.
Oh, wow.
And there would be immense blessings. Because he may not chant the Vedas correctly, he may not sing the bhajans correctly, he may not sing the shlokas correctly, but the intention, the intention of action, the intention of the feeling that he's actually serving the Lord is so strong. Yes. That's all Swami says, Bhava Priya.
I mean, purity is the essence of all sadhana.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, you know, so if you look at this entire chapter, you know, we are winding up this chapter 16.
Right.
If you see, Swami began by talking about how in our life there are few experiences that That's leave lasting impression.
Absolutely.
And so that is what he said are samskaras.
Mm.
So he began by saying that, you know, this is what comes very forcefully in your mind as you leave the body. And these moments which come into your mind in that final hour are your samskaras. Because that is what has left very, very deep impressions. In fact, it is there in all of our life, isn't it? If we just stop wherever we are and look back in our life, whatever, 30 years, 40 years, 60 years, I think a few instances will just flash, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Few.
Absolutely.
And then we have to ensure that those are beautiful moments.
Correct.
So
that is very true. And he says, those thoughts that come towards the end of your life, when you're about to die, and death is the only certain thing.
Only certain thing. Yes.
In fact, in this chapter, there is this one paragraph which I would just read out, which is, you know, kind of summarizes what we should do in that sense.
Yes.
He says, therefore, from tomorrow, keep always before the eye of memory death, which is inevitable, and engage yourself in the journey of life with good wishes for all, with strict adherence to truth, seeking always the company of the good, and with the mind always fixed on the Lord. Live, avoiding evil deeds and hateful and harmful thoughts, and do not get attached to the world. If you live thus, your last moment will be pure, sweet and blessed.
Wow. It's
very simple words and very beautiful thoughts, but how easy it is to put it into practice is something.
Well, I think it is not all that difficult also. It is just that we have to remind ourselves.
We have to be in that awareness all the time.
Awareness.
And
yes.
Swami says, if you do that, if you struggle to correct your defects, it's like a new awakening,
like a
new boyhood.
Yeah, I think that was also a very beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and after that, Swami, in the last two segments, he's only stressing on spending time doing good works and, you know, accumulating this good karmas.
He says you are always drawing your senses towards excitement and other things.
Yes.
Now you have to draw your mind towards inwards.
Yes.
You have to draw your mind inwards, and that is what will give you the Lord's vision.
Wow. And in the last segment, as we discussed today, Swami is so insistent. He's talking about have the Lord only as your protector, Parameshwara as your protector, and have that faith. I think faith, I always feel, and which Swami has also told, and this is something that every person has to experiment on their own, the power of faith.
Absolutely. And he says, you know, in a very nice example, he says in this chapter, don't give up hope. So in a sense, yes, you have faith that you're doing things in the right direction, and don't give up hope, because you never know that the 21st 21st stroke is what will break the rock.
Yes.
So if you're doing 20 good deeds and you feel what's happening, nothing good is happening, don't give up the 21st.
Yes.
You never know.
We never know. Yeah.
If for 20 strokes the rock is not broken, on the 21st it might break into pieces.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you have people even in the worldly plane, at 50 suddenly they do something amazing. It's not that if suddenly they have become something, it's something that they were trying.
They've been trying, and
and they say, I mean, Thomas Alva Edison, before he invented the bulb, you know, he failed 1,000 times.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he failed 1,000 times.
Oh.
So he says, I have only learned 1,000 ways of how not to do it.
My goodness.
So,
if not for Thomas Alva Edison,
you'd be all in darkness.
We all would be in darkness. Yeah, absolutely.
So, and the other beautiful thing is, as you do good, never think that, you know, no good that ever goes waste, that Swami says. And the other thing that you mentioned also is that, okay, if something has happened which is not good, don't worry, you know. Start again, start fresh, that will be the new awakening. That is the new awakening. So there is always hope in the Lord's Darbar, as they say. Beautiful. So I think, so that brings us to the end of chapter 16. I can't believe we have done already 16
chapters. Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think let's pray to Bhagwan that we can swim in this stream of Prema Vahini. And sanctify our lives contemplating on Him and His love and message. Dear listeners, please thank you so much, first of all, for being with us for this lovely satsang. If you have any queries or comments, as always, you can write to us, listener@radiosai.org. It would be very nice if you also open the book, the Prema Vahini, the first book that Swami wrote way back in the 50s, and share your thoughts and feelings. We would be happy to share them with all our listeners. Thank you so much. Jai Sai Ram.